Want to have your own business but don't want to start from scratch? Franchising might be the answer you're looking for. Welcome to the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show, the show that brings you thought leaders in business, franchising, and high-performance personal development. Whether you're a buyer, seller, franchisee, franchisor, or consultant, find everything you need to know about franchising right here. Own a business without the pain and financial losses that come with creating it. Find the time, freedom, and financial independence you can have through entrepreneurship. Learn how franchising can help you get there. Listen up and get ready for another episode of The Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.
Welcome to The Level Up Show with Nick Lopez, where we have the absolute pleasure of learning from thought leaders in business, franchising, and high performance personal development. Today's guest most certainly goes without exception. She is a wizard in helping businesses scale, create processes, and increase profitability. I'm really excited for this show, and I would like to welcome the founder and CEO of L-Cubed, Lisa Levy. Welcome to the show.
Nick, thanks so much for having me here today.
Absolutely. Well, my goodness, we are all about helping the world level up. And when it comes to business specifically, or high performance personal development, you have a couple things up your sleeve and a wonderful background in consulting. So let's jump in. Let's get started. Can you share with us how you got into the consulting space?
Absolutely. So I guess I want to start with the story. It's 2009, and I'm on my way to take a seat on the roller coaster. I'm standing in line. I'm waiting. The queue is moving forward. And finally, it's my turn. I swipe my ticket. I take a seat. The bar comes down, and I grab a hold, and I notice that my knuckles are turning white, and we haven't even started to move yet. I take a deep breath and I get ready and we start going and it lurches forward and chunk, 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 chunk. We're going up to the top and I'm holding on and I know what's about to happen. We take off and we twist and we turn and it's chaos. And I feel sick to my stomach. In the background, I hear ding. I open my eyes. I shake off the daydream as I step off the elevator on the top floor. Yes. It's Monday morning, it's 8 a.m., and the CEO has called me in, and I'm not entirely sure why. I walk to his door. I have to take another breath because that upset stomach feeling was really real. I knock on the door, and he greets me with a big smile. Just to be fair, he is an awesome man. He is a Texas charmer. Big smile, big hello, and a big hug. But I'll be really honest, I just don't feel it. I don't know what I'm in for, and he offers me a seat. And he starts talking, and I hear wah, 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 wah. We make everything too hard. Wah, 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 wah. Where did the peanuts come from? Wah, 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 wah. We're a startup after all, Lisa. Wah, 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 wah. This is just too hard. I'm smiling. I'm nodding. I hope at the right time, hoping and praying to get out of this conversation as fast as humanly possible. When it's over, I walk run from the building because I can't breathe. I need to catch my breath. I'm standing outside in the spring morning sun in Tempe, Arizona. It's a gorgeous day. I'm still a little queasy as I look back at this building. It's glass and it's gorgeous in the reflection. And all I see is the roller coaster to hell. And a little voice inside my head starts talking. It says, why do you keep doing this to yourself? This is my dream job. I am working for a startup company that is a rocket ship ready to take off. I am building a team of project and program managers. We are there to help this company grow and scale and actualize its potential. Another little voice says, then why are you so miserable? And I don't have a really good answer for it. But in that moment, the idea of L-Cubed was born. So what is L-Cubed? It's a consulting practice built off of the idea that we can do better work than I was seeing being done around me. In that corporate environment, every C-level executive had a team of consultants surrounding them, protecting their turf, and helping them be the best version of that leader that they could be. And in doing that, they were creating these silos, and nobody was working with anybody else. They were just trying to do their one thing and be better at it than anybody else in the market. They'd lost sight of what actually mattered, their customers. And so L-Cubed was founded on the premise that we should be customer-centric, we should know what our customers want and need, and we should be better at giving them those things than anybody else in the market.
So clearly, you were in corporate America, and you've seen that there were blinders, and there was need in the market to help remove those blinders, essentially.
Remove the blinders and break silos. And so we come at it, my background is in project management, it's in process management, it's in organizational change. These are huge best practices that large corporations invest millions, if not billions of dollars into. But there are skills and capabilities that anybody can learn. And so within L-Cubed, we've created a framework called adaptive transformation. And that's where we leverage those skills, those best practices as a combined process, as a combined framework to let smaller businesses get those advantages without the financial overhead that the large corporations are able to afford.
So you're breaking down silos. For folks that aren't familiar with that, you're speaking specifically to, I would imagine, a combination of maybe bureaucracy, as well as departments not syncing up across the organization.
And ego, and just a lack of awareness of what happens around them. So in the mindset of being customer-centric, and especially for smaller businesses, knowing who your customer is, what they want, what they need, is critical to your success. And so if we understand and build everything from that mindset of fulfilling a want or a need of our customer, we ensure that every action we take in our business day in and day out adds value to that customer. We are running the most scalable business we can possibly have. And it does not matter what industry we're in. As long as we keep our eye on that customer, we can do anything.
And clearly a startup, a smaller company, is not going to have the, in many cases, the experience or the capital to gain that intellectual capital,
right?
The knowledge and the strategy.
And that's why as a consulting organization, we can work with companies. I also do work as an advisor and as a coach, especially in that startup space where the funding is a little bit tighter and every dollar spent has to have real value return on that investment, right? A consulting engagement is expensive, but a coaching and learning experience that is really focused exclusively on building self-reliance in that team, so that they understand what a project is, what a process is, what organizational change is. These are important concepts that don't have to be huge and they don't have to be overly expensive. And every employee in every business is capable of understanding what they are and helping utilize them to build and grow that company.
So a lot of situations in a smaller company, the size that you're describing, there's generally the genius and then all the genius's helpers.
So in that mindset, right, at some point in time, that business, as it grows, that genius, that original founder, that idea, right, once it's tangible and it's real and growth starts to happen, the genius helpers need to grow into taking over the business operations and keep the genius focused on the next genius thing. Because more often than not, that individual has no background in business. And there's nothing about accounts payable, accounts receivable, heaven forbid, let's talk about HR, you know, scary things. But the genius founder is also passionately tied to the business. It's emotional. It's the baby, right? They want to care for it. And in caring for it with everything that they have, oftentimes they can start to suffocate it by micromanaging, and it's out of fear and out of a lack of knowledge. And if we build those genius helpers and grow them into being business leaders, that business is now growing and scaling. That founder, that visionary, the idea person is focused on the next idea. And that is called, right, that allows us to manage and plan for growth cycles. And that keeps the business growing and not plateauing and falling off. If we get the visionary being visionary and out of day-to-day operations, the sky's the limit.
And so you clearly need to create departments and, you know, build positions within an org chart, and you can't build the business around individuals. And that usually starts around the visionary, the CEO, the founder, and folks come on board and they're, you know, experiencing the whiplash of the leader's decision making in bursts. And, you know, 1 minute we're going this direction and the next minute we're going that direction.
Absolutely. And that initial tier of one or two, maybe it's five original helpers, they may not be any better at running the business than the founder and the visionary. I like to call them the superheroes, right? They put on the cape, they do everything that's necessary, the long days, the weeks that never end, all of the things that it takes to get it going. And then sometimes they get trapped in a role that they're not really skilled to do. They may or may not even really actually enjoy it, but they have the reputation of getting it done. And so they get stuck there. And it's important after kind of that first level of growth that we take a minute and we look at who's at the table, what seat are they in, who's on the bus, whatever analogy we want to use in this, and make sure that we have the right people in the right roles so that they can do the right work. And so with everything that I've done over time, it all boils down to a really simple kind of equation. People plus process times technology equals growth and scale. And it's really imperative and critical to success that we start with the people, that we know who we have, what their greatest strengths are, what their greatest value proposition is, and an understanding of, are they playing in that space? Do we need to shuffle things around? You can have one of the most amazing performers in the wrong role, and they will fail. And that's on leadership for not understanding that they put that person in the wrong place. So, right, when we have the right people doing the right work, great. What does it mean to do the right work? Well, that's process. What do we do every day? How does it work? Where does it begin? What is your job? And I'm really persnickety about the word process. And process means that it is something that is repeatable. And for a process to exist and be repeatable, it means it's documented and trained. So if you have Jan and Jim and they both do the same job, but they do it two totally different ways. And so when Jan is on vacation, Jim is struggling to keep things going because he does it differently. You're not running a business with a repeatable process. That is not scalable. So you've created single points of failures in individuals rather than building a process that can be trained and you can put anybody in it with an understanding of, you know, what they're supposed to be doing. So it really makes coming into that people and then process really, really critical. That last step, that multiplier of technology, that's when we get to the point where we're using technology to automate things that are highly repeatable and that don't require a human touch. So we can use systems and tools to do things so that we used to have 10 people working on this process. And with the technology, we really only need three of those people doing it, which means we have seven people to put in a place where they can add more value to our customer. And that's the beautiful thing. And that's what we do with L-Cubed. So we engage as executive coaches with small organizations, helping them understand what that framework is, moving our way through larger organizations where we can come in and do consulting engagements and be with them for a longer length of time, more touch intensive amount of time. But the whole goal, regardless of how we interact, is to help make those leaders and those founders self-reliant so that that business runs without any reliance on us, because we shouldn't be there long-term. It's a problem and a challenge I have with large consulting organizations that want to embed in the environment and grow their body count, and it doesn't add value. It's about the consulting organization making their bottom line and making their profit numbers. I don't want to do that. I want my clients to be highly self-reliant. And if we do repeat work with them, it's because we've helped them solve a problem and they have something new and we're helping them continue to mature and grow.
Do you find those phases happen at revenue tiers? Breaking out of the first mold where you have a lot of whiplash and really just very founder-led, no departments, no systems. You know, do you find that you create those roles, establish the departments, SOPs, and then technology comes in and then a more established executive leadership team? Do you think about those in terms of, is there any way that you define those life cycles?
So that's a really interesting question. And I don't know that anybody's posed it quite that directly. So in the beginning, right, they're the all hands on deck, right? You've got the visionary, the genius, and some, let's be honest, right? Those initial followers are a little bit crazy. They're getting on a ride and they don't know where it's going. And they're just a little bit crazy. And that is the wild, wild west. That is whatever it takes for bootstrapping, if they have some seed funding, whatever, right? It's whatever it takes to make the product or service sell. And yeah, it's absolutely insane. So many businesses fail to make that $1 million in revenue mark. Most businesses fail in the first 5 years. A higher percentage fail in that first year, right? So every year you're making progress, that's awesome. All of these maturity things that I'm talking about start to really have meaning really, truly when you start to have employees and numbers of employees where you have 10, 15, 30, 5 million in revenue is a threshold where it's really important to start to understand who your people are and what the processes are. When you scale and you're talking about 10 to 15 million in revenue, you better have some technology supporting good process and good people. Once you break 15 million, we have to look at that kind of all over again and make sure that we still really have the right people doing the right work and that the technology is scaling with us, because the jump from 15 to 25 million in revenue, that's a big one. But when you make that one happen, it's life-changing for everybody who works for that company. And so, yeah, there are little steps along the way where it's really important. But even with a solopreneur, the idea of understanding what work do I do, how does it add value to my customer or my client, lets you make ensure that you're not wasting time or money on things that don't matter. So these principles can fit at the smallest levels of a business that we have, and it's a mindset. And the mindset lets us be continuously adaptable so that we know what it is that matters. And it's not how cool our toy is, right? Our widget, our product, our service. It's the value it adds to our client or our customer.
Speaking of mindset, I'm curious, why do you get uncomfortable when somebody calls you an entrepreneur?
When I was a kid, my parents were real estate developers. They were legitimate, in my mind, entrepreneurs. They were out there. It had this cachet around it. It sounded like those are those people who are out there doing things. They're on the cover of magazines, right? How am I that? I am a person who likes to solve problems. I like to play with pieces of a puzzle that are called a business, right? Sometimes talk about it in terms of, right, our business is a Rubik's Cube. And when we have everything right, we think, you know, that we want it looking like this. But sometimes it's important that we mix things up to get the right efficiencies. But as we play with and we turn the wheel around, right, that we're doing it on purpose, so we're getting the outcome we want. An entrepreneur was, I don't know, it sounded like bigger than life. And so no, even today, 14 plus years into running this business, I still kind of chuckle and I say, yeah, I guess I'm an entrepreneur. But it still just feels weird, like I'm pretending to be something that I'm not. Maybe it's imposter syndrome peeking its head in from my psyche in the background going, hey, maybe you're not all that in a bag of chips. I don't know. But it is one of those weird words that I never use it to describe myself.
Yeah. And it used to be that entrepreneurship was just this word that folks glossed over. And, you know, it was entrepreneurship. That's boring, right? Business ownership. Who pays attention to that? But most certainly has been glamorized over the past decade or so.
And the thing that's really cool that I need to get over the hang up, corporate America, those big global companies, while they account for billions and billions and billions of dollars, they're less than 5% of the businesses in the world. Small businesses, medium-sized businesses, right? The lion's share of businesses are not those big corporations. In the US in particular, right, small businesses feed our economy. And so getting it right at that level is far more important than listening to any of the rhetoric that comes from the large financial institutions, CEOs, and any of those other billionaire crazy people who have a microphone and have the access to media, but they aren't actually driving our economy. Everybody who's listening to this podcast is driving our economy, far more impactful in the long run and in the bigger scheme of things, even though it's so much harder to give voice to each entrepreneur out there.
It is pretty neat that, you know, smaller, medium-sized companies are gaining access to more mediums that would have taken just an incredible amount of capital back in the day with social media and email and newsletters. And technology has really given the local small, medium-sized business owners the voice to the folks that are in their industry, their space. And it's made it a lot easier to become an authority in a space and really influence the marketplace and contribute toward improving it. Where again, you know, it used to be that entrepreneurship was glossed over and now it's glamorized. And it's a lot easier to talk about entrepreneurship and talk about it and execute on it, sure. But you had mentioned the failure rate of companies that make it to $1 million. And there is this need to understand that business has processes, has systems, has formulas. It is an Rubik's Cube. It is a puzzle. And there are ways of doing it effectively. And that's frankly why some make it and some don't, and why some organizations are at certain thresholds and others are not. And yeah, I mean, it really does provide a mirror, if you will, provides that insight to, of course, I'm generalizing, you're going to get all sorts of variance there in terms of the quality of the process that's produced that tier. But it's easy nowadays to get into business and talk about it and never really grow a business. But on the other side, it does provide a great platform to grow the business. So interesting environment, just kind of thinking about what you're talking about. These are some of the things that are coming to my mind. But I love your perspective on system creation. And when you think about strategy, it's so key to create a vision, create a strategy, be forward thinking. What are some of your pillars for hitting strategic goals?
So one of the things that's really important to me, and we're going to start with mindset, right, is getting that leadership mindset around what we do today will not be acceptable next year or the year after that, right? We have to continuously innovate. We have to continuously improve. And so building that into culture is a really important pillar before we even talk about executing strategy, right? But we have to know that we're constantly going to be looking at how to be better tomorrow than we are today. As we go through that, I like to use innovation as the strategic driver. And innovation is a process like anything else. It's about creating ideas and experimenting and prototyping with those ideas and seeing what works, throwing away the things that don't work, not fretting about that, right? Some people might call those things that fail. I don't want to worry about it failing, right? It just didn't work. It didn't give us the outcome we were looking for. So we've got ideas, we're experimenting, we're getting some outcomes, and then we're really utilizing and leveraging the outcomes that make an impact. So that process should go on throughout the year in any business. Touch it once a quarter, play with things for that quarter, and the outcomes of those little experiments drive the strategic objectives for the upcoming years. And so starting with that mindset of what we're doing today is going to be different tomorrow, having that built in place is critical to being able to execute strategically, because driving strategy equals driving change. So the key pillars in that, right, are the willingness to experiment, the learning from things that don't go well and not freaking out over the idea of failure, and implementing and leveraging what works to the fullest capability that you possibly can. In all of those three things, it's all through the lens of the value for the customer. What we do and how we do it is not interesting to our customer. What they get is what matters. And so if we keep that lens really laser focused on the outcomes for our customer, that value that they get, our strategy will fall in line effortlessly. Our ideas and our experiments will inform and tell us exactly what we should be doing and how we should be doing it, especially if we're talking with our customers along the way. So creating that strategic plan is all about understanding where you want to go, knowing that it's going to change. But when you set those objectives, they have to be able to break them down into executable work or projects. I've sort of talked about that a little bit before, but that project portion, that project management piece, everybody should know how to start work, plan what has to happen, and get to an end where we've created something new. And that is how we execute to strategy. When we make those changes, what does it mean to process? Well, when we start to document and understand our process, we need to start with that one thing that's the most important to our company. What does it mean to our customer? What do they want? And then how do we back out what we actually do to deliver for them? We get rid of so much wasted time and energy on things that we think sound so cool that add no meaning, no value to our customer in any way, shape, or form. And if we get rid of that, we are executing to our strategy more effectively and more efficiently. And taking our teams through the idea of that change model, we are continuously adapting. And so for our employees to be on that journey with us to drive strategy forward, they have to understand what's in it for them and what their work does to contribute to that final outcome and that result, that value for the customer. And if we keep that constantly moving, so our employees know what they're doing, they know why they're doing it because they know what it means to their customer. They know what the performance goal is for the processes that they're running. They know what projects they're managing and how they're going to change and what that does to drive our strategy forward. We have a business that is running, and I like to call it future-proofed. We have now future-proofed this business so that regardless of what comes at us, take, for example, a pandemic, right? We can adapt to that change because as a business, we know how to do it. We do it every day. Through our experimenting, through everything else, what has happened? Something is stopping business. We need to look at what does it mean to our customers, and we can adapt and respond to that without panicking.
Yeah, future-proofing. My goodness, you have a mindset focused on the customer with a healthy expectation that there are systems and processes in place to help us navigate change. That is most certainly a mindset within an organization, especially one that's growing and the market is constantly changing. You mentioned it, something like COVID, right? But how do you do that? Is your focus on the customer? Is that what's driving innovation and the change? I mean, clearly, right? You have an eye for everything. The customer. That's all that matters. So how are you gauging what's important to change for the customer? There's so many different elements to what could be changed in terms of the product, the service, the experience, you name it. What is that process for identifying what to change or what to level up for the customer?
I've talked exclusively about we have to keep the customer in mind, but keeping them in mind without talking and interacting with them is actually a little bit dangerous because we start to make assumptions. And when we assume what the customer might want or need, I can promise you with 80% certainty that assumption is wrong. So what's important is have a relationship with your customers, have feedback loops, have surveys, have focus groups, have quarterly events where they can come and talk and share ideas, have people who do outreach, especially when things go wrong. They're not fun conversations to have, but they're really, really informative. So in that process where I was talking about, you know, we're coming up with ideas, we're picking some, we're prototyping and experimenting and seeing what they might look like, those experiments should include our customers. We should have a focus group where we show them what this new service might look like, where we demonstrate what the product might do, and ask for input and feedback. Because right now it's an idea in our heads and it sounds brilliant, but we can be so incredibly wrong that we could sink a business with an investment in something if we don't understand that the customer's actually going to buy it. Just because we assume and think, because we think it's cool, that's a danger zone. That's be very aware of the assumptions and thinking that you know what your customer wants without actually asking them. In one engagement I was working with one of my clients, we needed to streamline their processes. Their customer satisfaction for their industry was literally the lowest in the country, and we couldn't do much worse than they were doing. And we started to look at their processes and all of the teams that worked on delivering the service to their customer. And there were about a dozen internal teams who were doing work, and they were working hard, really, really hard, 7 days a week. Blood, sweat, tears, legitimately. And they could never, ever meet their customers' expectations. The customers were always really irate, really vocal, and terribly pissed off. And they were even more pissed off because they were not able to switch service providers. They had no choice. It had to be this particular provider. So we put a bunch of them in a room and we started asking questions. What do you want? And the needs were really pretty simple. We want our services provided by the time you tell us they're going to be provided. But right now, every time you tell us a date, it's 4 weeks later, it's 6 weeks later. You know, it kills our business if we can't count on you to do your part. That's a really simple ask, right? Make a commitment, honor the commitment. That's like basic. It took us 3 months of tearing apart the processes where the teams had never communicated with one another. There was redundant work. Three teams were doing the exact same work and none of it was actually getting to the customer. It was just a rat's nest of insanity. But after we reworked that with a single thought of delivering the service on the date we commit that it'll be there, what was taking them 16 to 20 weeks, they were now delivering in 4. Now we have some of the most delighted customers in the world. Customer satisfaction, I haven't seen over time, but I'm certain that it's improved exponentially. There's no way that it can't because where they were was really bad. But all they did was ask their customer, right? We had a group of about 150 people in a conference room. What do you want? Unanimously, it was one thing. With that singular focus, everything about how they performed their work changed. And there were literally teams of people who were released from that process to go and do things that mattered more to other customers that business served. It changed everything about how that business operated. One singular focus, make a commitment and honor it.
Clearly, you've crystallized the number one pain point for a customer. And, you know, that project could take half a year, whatever it is, but planning quarterly through those systems and those processes, aligning the team to drive that long-term strategic objective, which is ultimately to better serve the customer. My goodness, it seems so obvious, but to your point, so many assumptions are made. We've talked so much about future-proofing and what goes into that. My goodness, the sustainability of any business is profitability. So, you know, how do you work with clients to ensure just that healthy profitability along the way?
So I've hinted that's throughout what we've been talking about, starting with the formula people plus process times technology, right? That's about being effective and efficient. And when we know that we have the right people doing the right work and then use technology to just do more of it faster, we are being really cognizant of our operating expenses and our overhead. When we talk about continuously adapting and improving, we're talking about getting rid of wasted time and effort, which translates to money. Right. So all of these things inform, right, that ability to be profitable, because when we focus on the work that adds value for our customer, we pull away all of those things that create waste. And all of that waste is taking away from our profitability. And so it is not a big mathematical calculation. It's about doing the right things for the right reasons, and the profitability follows.
It's about value, right? That supply and demand. And when you provide more value, you gain more clients, more revenue, and ultimately that leads to increased profitability, unless there are some P&L issues just internally that are eating up the bottom line. But
we should be taking care of that with our effectiveness, right? And understanding that if we're doing work that doesn't drive that value, it's wasteful and needs to go away. Caveats to all of this. There are going to be years where there are capital investments. There are going to be things, but those are done on purpose. That is with purpose, and that's okay. We have to do that to grow. But in this framework, in this adaptive transformation framework, in this mindset that we build, everything that we do should be keeping how the business operates as effective and efficient as possible, which as we then acquire more customers, right, our profitability scales.
I mean, clearly, you know, you have a deep passion for helping organizations level up by future-proofing and discuss that. And you've done quite a bit of speaking. So I did want you to share a little bit about what success looks like from that perspective and what tips you have related to doing just that, speaking engagements.
Speaking engagements are awesome. And it's a great time to, you have an audience where you can share thoughts, wisdoms, hopefully inspire. But the three tips to ultimate success in speaking, and I'm sorry, there's nothing sexy about this. Be there when you say you're going to be there. Start your presentation on time, end on time. Those are the three most important things to any event planner in the speaking industry. I know it's not sexy, but it's another aspect of your business, and you need to run it with the same professionalism as anything else that you do. Beyond that, it's the stories, right? Tell a good story, make it connect to the audience in a way that they understand the purpose behind why you're sharing it. I shared the story of the roller coaster and how I started my business. And out of that, right, it led me to understand the need that I wanted a business that would be different than the traditional consulting model, that would afford me that opportunity to be in control and design and build what really is my own roller coaster. But that affords me the opportunity to say, I will do business with you, but not with you, and pick and choose clients and fire clients sometimes because that's the right thing to do. And that's hard, but right, those are the things. So tell the story and make the points and make those connections for the audience to understand that third point. Stepping into entrepreneurship was terrifying because my parents had been entrepreneurs, and it is a roller coaster ride. There are good years and there are bad years and there are things that happen, but you are actually designing and controlling your future in a way that you never can as an employee of a corporation. And so I stepped into it and have never looked back. So in that speaking space, tell a story, make some connections that are human connections that everybody can understand and relate to. And for some, hopefully go, gosh, I never thought of it that way. And maybe I can do that too.
Yeah, especially if you understand and have experience presenting on what you're talking about, that is a totally different reality. You know, you're able to share stories referencing learning lessons and complementing the points that you're making. Absolutely. Storytelling is, you know, it's 101 for communication, and that comes from experience. And my goodness, you're going to have a lot more confidence talking about what you know versus maybe something that you studied and speaking on. Two totally different versions there. As you were talking, you know, those are the XYZs. And, you know, I feel like the other part of that is the experience being qualified.
And we all have stories. So everybody has a story to tell. Everybody has something to stand up on the stage and share. It's do you want to is also, I guess, one of the key questions. And, you know, not everybody wants to do that, whether it's the stage or a virtual stage like this. And that's okay. If it's uncomfortable in a way that is terrifying, you don't have to do it. But I also do sort of have an underlying belief that those things that make us feel uncomfortable, if we step into those and work through them, right, that's where we grow. It may be worth a little bit of discomfort to see if there's something out there in that space for you.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be nerves when speaking, most certainly. And stepping out in that and getting repetitions, that's the best thing you can do. You know, we've been chatting. I can't help but notice the book behind you, Future Proofing Cubed. Would you share a little bit about the book?
Absolutely. So Future Proofing Cubed is a book that I released in May of 2020. And it takes the reader through the adaptive transformation journey, all of the things that I've been talking about here in a little bit more depth and a little bit more understanding of kind of how you put the pieces of that framework together. There are dozens of stories from leaders in the industries who use these tools, use these thought processes and have had successes. Some talks, you know, about some of their obstacles and things and challenges and overcoming things. But Future Proofing Cubed tells you everything that there is to know about the adaptive transformation framework and how we do work with our clients in our engagements, whether it's in that consulting or coaching space. It's available on Amazon.
And it's doing pretty well on Amazon, I might add. Congratulations. Way to step out as an entrepreneur. I mean, you are doing incredible work. You're helping organizations see around corners, identify blind spots, and appropriately help them put their cube together and sometimes mess it up every once in a while, as you put it. I love the analogy. I really appreciate you making the time to come onto the show. I most certainly have learned an incredible amount about the expertise that you have with your consulting firm, and you just so beautifully communicated it And I can see tremendous value that you bring to organizations. I've learned as well in today's call. Folks want to get in touch with you and learn more. Clearly, they can get on Amazon. They can purchase the book. But if they want to contact you directly, how can they do that?
The website is L Cubed Consulting. On the main website, there are places where you can record a message and start a conversation with me directly from the website. There are links to my calendar. We can spend some time together. You can find more about me on LinkedIn. I'm Lisa L. Levy. On YouTube, you can find the channel L Cubed Consulting, and there are hundreds of videos of me talking about all sorts of things. So, you know, if there's something out there that resonates, please then come back around and drop me a message on the website and start a conversation.
You heard it. My goodness. Lisa Levy with L Cubed Consulting. Again, it was a pleasure. Thank you for being on the show. And if you've made it all the way here to the end, thank you. And hit the subscribe button. It's how we are able to continue to grow and bring thought leaders like Miss Lisa Levy to the show. Most certainly drop a comment down below, contribute, ask some questions. But more importantly, if Lisa has moved you, I encourage you to reach out to her and find out how she can help you to improve your organization. Lisa, again, thank you. And as always, level up.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show. Remember, it's never too late to get started on your entrepreneurial journey. Don't forget to subscribe, like, and share if you enjoyed today's segment. Catch us again next week and visit limepainting.com for more of the Level Up with Nick Lopez Show.